Welcome to the UFO File Show with your host, Jerry Pippin.
Hey, this is Jerry Pippin, and we're at the Cover Up Cafe, and we're in Roswell, New Mexico. And I don't know if you've seen we've got the story behind. I've seen a T-shirt with it on. I've seen the actual skulls across the street they're selling. It looks like the same skull that you both wrote a book about. This is Ray Young and Melanie Young. How are you?
We're doing pretty good. Glad to be in Roswell this year.
Now, where are you located,
Ray? We're in El Paso, Texas.
Okay, now tell me a little bit about the Star Child skull. What are we talking about?
Well, this skull was found back in the 1930s by a Hispanic young girl who was in Mexico visiting family. She went into a mine shaft and found two skeletons in that mine shaft. One was a normal adult human skeleton. The other one was definitely misshapen and deformed. She did not know what it was, and she picked them up, brought them to the house. She wasn't supposed to have them, so she hid them outside. And then rain came and torrential rains, and it washed everything away. The next day, on her way, when they were trying to pack up to come back to El Paso, she was only able to recover the two skulls. And she brought those back and kept them all these years.
Let me get this story straight. Ray, if I understand it, they had a flood. Everything was washed away except the two skulls?
That was our understanding. We actually were not able to talk to the actual girl that did it. She passed away before we came in possession of the skulls.
And how did that happen, that you got possession, not how she passed away?
Well, she had, at the time of her death, her family gave it to a friend of ours. At that time, he kept it for a while, decided he didn't want it, asked my wife, since she's a neonatal nurse, if she wanted to look at it, see what it was. She said, yes, sure, we want it. And so he gave them to us because they didn't want anything to do with them.
And they didn't want anything to do with it? Did they think there was a curse or something?
Well, they were both government employees, and they were afraid. They knew that it was possibly maybe alien, and they just didn't want the government to mess with their livelihood.
So, right off the bat, they figured it was an alien skull.
Yes.
How about the first time you saw it? Did you think it was?
It looked strange enough to be.
And so you wrote a book.
No, actually, Mr. Lloyd Pye, our lead researcher.
Right, and Lloyd's here.
Yes, he's here at the conference. Right. He's here. He just finished writing the book. It's the first day of the initial publishing today. We have them over at the library annex of the museum. And he will be there to autograph them and speak about it also. We also speak about the skulls.
Now when we talk about this book, did Lloyd do a good job? I mean, did he cover pretty much everything?
He did an amazing job. It starts from the day we started with this project. We met him all the way through all the trials and tribulations we've had, ups and downs, all the testing he's done. He's been all over the world with testing. And it's written in a way that everyone can understand. It's in a an autobiographical way. It's a story so that you can actually understand it instead of being scientific mumbo jumbo that everybody goes, huh?
Well, do we know much about this alien skull?
Well, we do know that the Star Child, the mother of the Star Child, is human, because we did get the mitochondrial DNA out, which is the DNA of the mother. We do know that the Star Child is a male. We were able to extract the XY.
You could tell that from the skull, huh?
From the chromosomes. But yes, we were able to get all of that out of the chromosomes. We were not able to get the father's DNA to actually show up on a test.
Well, you've done a lot of investigating and a lot of scientific investigation.
Yes,
and I guess that's because your wife's a technical person.
That's right. We all are. And the person we got, Lloyd Pye, is such an amazing researcher. We made sure everything step by step was scientific and not just guesswork.
Now, what do we make of all of this finding? This had to be some time back for it to be in the condition it was.
Well, under carbon dating, we found that they're 900 years old.
So that would push it back, in my math, back to 1,200 or so.
Right around there, yes.
Maybe 1,150.
Something like that, yes. They weren't found until 1930-ish, in the 30s. So, you know, they've been well preserved, but they were also found in a mine, so they were out of the elements.
Why do you think they got to the mine? I mean, does anybody have an idea? And you didn't find a body, any other kind of bones or anything? Just the heads?
No, just a complete skeleton. We found both skeletons.
Oh, did you? Yes. Okay, I didn't understand
both
that.
Both skeletons.
Well, tell me about that. Was it a little guy, big guy?
Well, what the lady found was when she went into the mine shaft that she wasn't supposed to be in, that laying on top of the ground was the normal skeleton, the normal human skull, and sticking out of the ground was a misshapen hand. They were either holding hands or had his hand wrapped around hers or something. And so the girl simply just undug up the other skeleton, and then she found the entire skeleton that was totally deformed and misshapen. Again,
with the body part was not normal either?
None of the body looked normal to her. At least that's the story that we have.
Do you have just the skulls or all of them?
That's all we have is the skulls. After the torrential rains, everything was washed away. All she recovered at that time back in the 30s were the two skulls.
And nobody's come around, because people know about this by now. Maybe no, you just washed away and lost forever. Nobody found something.
Right. Well, realize
that we know of.
Right. Realize it's around 70 years ago. Nobody knew about it for 60 years. Why would they have gone down to look for them? They've been in the elements ever since. Animals could have got them. You have no clue where they'd be.
Now, tell me a little bit about what you folks do in El Paso, right?
Right.
Do you have a shop or something?
I'm a registered nurse. I'm a retired registered nurse, and I'm now teaching.
You can't be retired. You're too young.
I'm burned out. So I quit nursing, and I'm now doing massage therapy and teaching massage therapy and anatomy at one of the local colleges.
And what's your background, Ray?
Well, I'm an electrical engineer for 30 years, and I just retired, and I'm also a nationally certified massage therapist.
See, I thought I looked in great shape, and you guys are retired already, and I'm still going.
Oh, we try.
Well, we're still going. We're just not doing our conventional jobs.
Right. You don't have to go in and put the time card.
Exactly.
So what's your impression of Roswell here? And the week, you've been here all week, I take it.
Yes, we've been here all week. We have thoroughly enjoyed Roswell, and it's a great place to be, and we are grateful that you guys have had us at the museum, and we'd love to come back whenever you want us.
Well, great. Have you come across any surprises or something's changed your mind since you've been here?
No, you pretty much
expected what you saw.
Right. We've done that, but we really appreciate everything the director of the museum has done for us. She's done a spectacular job setting everything up, and I really want to thank her personally on the air.
Yeah, Julie's quite a lady.
She sure is. She's been very wonderful to us.
And the UFO Museum, what's the latest? I hear they're going to build a new building or something.
I'm not much on to that. I heard her say something today about being finished in about 3 years. Okay. So that's all I know.
So but for the time being, it's going to be right down the street from the Cover Up Cafe, and it'll be there for a while.
Yes, sir. That's what we understand.
Yeah. What do you think of Roswell? What do you make of it? I mean, the incident itself, the crash.
Oh, it's been very interesting for all the years. We've kept up with it for many, many years.
And I imagine at the UFO Museum, they're talking about the revealing of the hot affidavit, because Walter was quite involved. Do you hear any, most people, what are they saying about this?
You know, we've been stuck in the library. We haven't really had a chance to speak to anybody else about it. We get bombarded with the skull stuff that nobody's really even told us about it. Julie told us it was going to happen, but we haven't had a chance to talk to anybody else. By the time they see us, they're too enthralled with our skull to even worry about it.
And you're right there in the research library itself.
Right. We're in the annex, right in the back. Come on in. Tomorrow's the last day. We have the book to sell, which is a really great deal, and it's probably the only time you'll ever get, if you want, the owners to sign and the author to sign the book.
Now, is this book going to be for sale on websites? Or?
Yes, the skull is also there. We have the original skulls that have not been cut. Well, these have been cut on, and we have the two skulls that were found back in the 1930s. We also have the replica, so you can come touch and feel and look and see and actually see the differences in the two skulls.
Can you get the replica off your website, too? Can you order that?
They're $3,000 if you want to.
Well, will you take a check? No, no, yeah, no.
Cash cash only.
Okay, so but the book is available, and
the book is available. You can get it at the website LloydPie.com or theStarChildProject.com or BellLab.com. Those are the three places you are welcome to get it at.
And we have links to that on our website. Thanks very much for coming by. Let's give the Youngs a hand here, everybody. An amazing story for sure. We're broadcasting from the Cover Up Cafe. We'll be right back.
The biggest secret ever is about to be revealed. Fast Walkers. UFO and alien disclosure.
Words you were never meant to hear.
It's clear we're dealing with a cosmic Watergate.
This is the biggest secret in the history of the human race, the known modern history of government.
Photos you were never meant to see. Video you never knew existed. People you were never meant to meet.
As Jack Nicholson would say, you can't handle the truth.
Essentially everything that you would want to know has been covered up.
Things you were never meant to know about.
No one has produced a higher quality, better produced DVD. Anytime, anywhere. Fast Walkers now available on DVD for only $19.95 at ShopJerryPippin.com.
Hello everyone, this is Jerry Pippin and we're broadcasting from the Cover Up Cafe in Roswell. And, of course, Roswell, New Mexico had something happen 60 years ago, and they're observing it, the famous UFO crash. And we've had a terrific time here. We're at the Cover Up Cafe right down the street from the UFO Museum in downtown Roswell. And we are going to kick off the show tonight with a very interesting fellow who has some credentials. He works with MUFON at the national headquarters. But you actually are in Northern California, aren't you, Chuck Reaver?
I do two things. I'm chief investigator in Northern California for MUFON, and I'm also director of investigations for MUFON.
Now you have a convention coming up here in August.
We do, August 10th in Denver.
And it's been quite successful over the years, and you have a new director at MUFON, and really, I hear nothing but good things happening. Why don't you bring our listeners up to date on what's happening?
Well, I'll be happy to, Jerry. Last year, we had a new international director. Name's James Carrion. James is, he speaks fluent Russian. He speaks fluent Spanish, of course, English. He's former Army intelligence, and he's 42 years old, has a nice family, which we met today, finally, for the first time. And a terrific guy. If you ever had a boss, this is the kind of guy you want.
Yeah, that's what I understand. We've had him on the air, and he seemed nice enough on the air.
Yeah, this isn't going to get me a raise or anything. You realize that?
Well, no, we're going to double your salary.
Yes, I suppose so.
Yeah. In other words, most of the MUFON activities are more or less volunteer.
Everything is volunteer for MUFON. Uh-huh. But the assignments during the last year have been quite a few. I was given the assignment a year ago to write a new field investigator's manual, and that's been completed. It's in edit now. Excuse me. It consists of investigative platforms plus information. It will be going online in our case management system very soon. I also developed a state director's manual. That's been done. It's been sent to the state directors. We get a lot of help with this kind of thing from the members. It's been a terrific year. It's been a difficult year, but MUFON is actually spooling up to do several different types of things.
Yeah, what exactly are you going to be doing? I know you've been famous for investigations, but you're expanding that area of expertise, I understand.
Yes, we are.
Tell me a little bit about that.
I'll be happy to. The standard investigation, which includes the Valley classifications, which your audience probably is not familiar with, consists of what we call flybys, maneuvers, close encounters, and anomalous lights. And we will consider that to be what we call a standard type of investigation. That would be a standard platform, and there are certain procedures we go through to develop information for that. The second platform we have will be an abduction platform. We have never gone in and investigated platforms as a policy of, or investigated abductions.
Well, this is quite a switch for MUFON,
very,
I think.
Very much a switch. The Board of Directors approved that last year. And then we're also going to have a platform for cattle mutilations and crop circles.
Well, you know, it sounds like you're covering the entire gamut. Originally, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but MUFON really kind of concentrated on the sightings themselves.
They concentrated on the sightings in the sky, whether they be lights or so on, and they really kind of left a lot of the important information from abductions and so on out of the picture. That no longer will be the case.
And I take it you sound enthusiastic, so I take it you think these are good changes.
I think these are very good changes. We're expanding the library. We're expanding our
So you have a library in Denver itself?
We have a research library in Denver.
A physical library?
Yes, very much like they have here in Roswell at the museum.
And in addition to that, you know, you've really made some great changes on the website, I think.
Very great changes on the website. We have 48 state directors, or I guess 50 state directors. We have a couple states without them, but that's being worked on. We have added about 40 new investigators since February of this year. I know because I grade the exams. And I can't tell you exactly how many investigators we have. But
by saying I grade the exams, I take it that not just anyone can say, hey, I want to be an investigator. You guys are pretty careful.
That's correct. We expect a certain particular grade of 80% on the exam. There's then a period of time of mentoring, where they are what we call field investigators, and later on they may become senior field investigators and so on. also, Jerry, in the past there has been some talk that perhaps we didn't do quite as good a job as maybe some others in doing investigations. I'm not sure that's true. I think we've always done a really fine job. But we're going to become even better by doing what we call forensic investigations. And now by forensic, we don't mean that we're going to take tissue samples from aircraft or unknown objects or so on, but the term forensic means suitable for public opinion and public discussion, and also suitable in court. And we are going to do everything we can that will contribute to that. That is, we will have such a complete report that it cannot be arguable.
Now, when we talk about your area, Northern California, that's a fairly active area as far as sightings.
It's a really active area, all up and down the Central Valley, basically from Sacramento down through Lodi into Stockton, into Bakersfield, is extremely active with lots of sightings. As a matter of fact, the very first sighting in California was in 1896 in the town of Lodi and Stockton, right between those two towns.
Oh, yeah, Take Me Back to Lodi. That's a country song, I think.
Yes, I think so.
So all the way back to 1896, that even beats that to 1898 sighting in Texas that people talk about.
Yes, they had that they had that sighting in Texas, and this was a particular airship that nobody had ever seen before. And every sighting that we investigate, it doesn't mean it's an alien sighting. It doesn't mean it comes from another planet or another parallel universe or whatever. What we do is we investigate and try and determine whether the object is known or unknown, whether it could be something else other than a known aircraft. We get into the rest of it later on, but that's basically our job, is to determine, is it known or is it unknown?
When we talk about these sightings that go all the way back in time, it's hard to fathom that we didn't really hear a lot about them. But I guess it's just communications weren't like they are today.
We didn't have the internet way back
no,
then.
No, they didn't have picture phones. And you get a lot of pictures like that, I imagine, these
days. Yes, we get a lot of pictures. One of the latest ones that was kind of interesting, we had a cell phone image that had a perfect UFO in it, perfect saucer-shaped object. It came from Puerto Rico, and then we got another one from Bakersfield with the same object. We looked at the instrument that was taking the picture, and if you're familiar with charge coupled devices, there's something called blooming. And blooming is what happens when a charge coupled device, or we call them pixels now in our cameras, becomes overloaded. And evidently, the shutter mechanism in cell phones has such a configuration that if that particular set of pixels is overloaded, it looks just like a UFO. So we determined that was an artifact of the
all of a sudden, with the digital technology, these artifacts begin to show up.
That's correct. Sure. That's correct.
And a lot of times, people come and they say, "Well, I didn't see it, but it's on the camera." It's because it's an artifact. Probably.
That's right. And every sighting and every event we looked at very skeptically. We're not easy. We don't think that everything we see is a UFO. As a matter of fact, we think a lot of things we don't see are UFOs. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, that's fine. Out of the reports that you get a year, what do you think are actual sightings could be real? Is there a percentage?
I mean,
you'd have to guess.
Yes, that's really difficult to tell and to say.
One out of five?
Yeah, no. I think Peter Davenport has said recently, and he has a National UFO Reporting Center, that he gets about 50% where people are calling in, their kids or so on, and their hoaxes. We are estimating with what we get, perhaps we have 1% that are hoaxes. We probably have 70% that are knowns.
Wow.
But there's a 30% that we truly cannot identify as any type of a known aircraft.
But you don't get a lot of hoaxes at all, isn't it? I said how?
Not that we can tell. And the reason is we send out investigators. And we call people, we document what we see, we get drawings, we get pictures. We have face-to-face conversations, which helps us to eliminate that type of problem.
So that probably is part of the test of MUFON when you take somebody on board.
That's correct. We expect a very high degree of professionalism.
I mean, it's more than three pictures of flying saucers and pick the one that you think is real.
You pick the one you think is real. That's right. Yeah. Yes, there's a whole narrative that goes along with it. We also do it's a Ballister-Gauss program, and it's a mathematical reduction of the sighting itself, and it gives us an arithmetical number that helps identify, is this actually an unknown or is it a known object? So it's not only anecdotal evidence, it's not only pictures, it's also a little bit of mathematics involved here.
Tell me, you're using the scientific method, then, more or less.
We're certainly trying.
Yeah, tell me what's been happening to you in Roswell here. You've been mixing with people. We ran across each other several times.
Yes, it's been great.
You run across anybody really interesting?
Rich,
a story? Well, they all are, aren't they?
Yes, they all are. We have stories. I had a woman come up today, and she was talking about an experience that she had in Texas as a young girl. And we have one of our MUFON representatives there, Yvonne Smith, who deals with missing time and so on. And so we promptly introduced her to Yvonne. So we're able to help some people.
What's MUFON's official stand on Roswell in 1947, or do they have one?
I mean, we don't have a really official stand on that. We know that certain things have occurred. In the things that we know, which appears on our website, we have three things. I can't remember them all right now, but one is they are here. Two is they deserve attention and inspection and investigation. And that's kind of where we are.
Yeah, speaking of that website, you have real-time people can post things right at the moment, right?
The public can go into our what we call case management system. They can immediately report any type of sighting. As a matter of fact, I take telephone calls 24 hours a day, bless my wife, and we encourage people after they talk to me to go on the website to go ahead and report the sighting. But we also... I take phone calls on sightings and investigations, and we have other people which take phone calls on other subjects.
Now when we talk about people reporting things and the sightings reports you get, most people think, well, it's in the middle of the night, but there's a lot of daytime sightings, right?
There's a lot of daytime sightings.
In fact, it may be over half. I don't know.
I would think so. I don't have any figure on that one.
Yeah. But it is a 24-hour phone number.
There is a 24-hour phone line. MUFON set this up about a year ago where we have four different places that somebody can call, and I take two of those. As I say, one is investigations, one is sightings and the test and so on. So we try and have a voice rather than a voicemail, And if I can't answer it, if I'm busy, it goes to my cell phone. If it doesn't hit there, it lands up on my computer with the number. It's in a WAV file, and we call people as quickly as we can. You know, I could be out of town. I could be busy doing something else.
You can still check it.
And we can still check it, and then we send it on. After I talk to the person, we send it on to our state investigator for him to take over or her to take over and continue with it.
I know you got a dinner engagement here in a moment. And we won't tell Gene Fraser and everybody at the Cover Up Cafe it's at a different place.
Oh, no, please don't do that.
Yeah. But I know you have to go. We could talk for hours.
Thank you very much, Jerry. I appreciate the invitation.
You got any final thoughts or something that we didn't cover you'd like to get out there?
No, we're just going to keep going forward and doing the best we can.
Okay, let's give him a hand. Chuck Reeves.
Thanks.
We'll be right back. This is Jerry Pippin, and we are at the Cover Up Cafe.
Hello, this is Farah Yurduze. Maybe you have questions about love, your job, your health, money and more. With my psychic gifts and my tarot readings, we can reveal the solutions to your deepest mysteries. Please visit me through Jerry Pippin Radio and let's find the answers together.
Click on Farah's banner for the answers to the most personal question. The Cover Up Cafe in Roswell, and it's the 60th anniversary celebration. It's going strong. It's on Saturday night. You've got two last names, Patricia.
Yes.
Yeah. Do we put a hyphen between those two?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Well, tell our audience exactly your full name then.
Patricia Johnson Holm.
Patricia Johnson Holm. I thought it was going to be like Patricia Johnson Wax, but maybe you're related to the Johnsons. They get a little money.
I'm related to certain Johnsons from New Jersey, but, well, that's another story.
Yeah, we won't get into that. Tell us why you're here in Roswell.
Well, you're going to find this a little surprising. And they say that they have not heard from the aliens, and yes, they have. I was on the crash. Was born into a baby's body in Longview, Washington. That's why the Kenneth Arnold sighting was so key to what was going on overhead when being born. There was a UFO that actually saved my mother's and myself through the birth process. There is so much behind this that's just tremendously hard to get out quickly and easily.
We're covering a lot of territory here in two or three sentences. Let's back up and let's go one step at a time. Tell me again exactly what you're saying here. About the Kenneth Arnold story we're aware of.
Yeah, that's Murray Island. All of this is connected to the birth on July 9th, 1947.
That's when you were born.
Yes, in College General Hospital, Longview, Washington, on July 9th, 1947. Within minutes, you'll see that there was a telegram sent to Truman about the birth, and they were scared, to put it simply. And there was really nothing to be scared about, because what this is all about on Roswell, and this is what I've been trying to say. This is the first time, by the way, I've even been able to start to speak out, and I've never even known about the conferences in advance to be able to go if I were allowed the funds to do it. But it's been a very cloistered situation, not wanting this information out. And what you want to look at is who's behind that. What do they think they have to gain? Because what Roswell is really all about is Roswell, Rose is well. This indicates that the rose is well. What is the rose? It's the white rose of the House of Stuart, but more concisely, the blessing of the House of David. You will find that the abductees are from the House of David for the most part. That's why it's generational, and it's also very spiritual.
Now you're saying that only people from the House of David lineage are the ones that are abducted?
No, that's the majority.
Okay.
And you will find, just as your previous guest, I suspected, and so asked him, and he said, yes, I think I am from the House of David. You see, that is considered the lost tribe of Israel. Actually, Judah.
So, So you have that lineage.
Yes, I'm of the house and lineage of David.
Mm-hmm. And so, is this your first trip to Roswell?
Yes.
And how's the reception been when you come in?
It's my first trip in this body. I've actually been here, and I've been explaining to other people what is located where, and I really appreciated Philip Mantle bringing out what he did, because he verified what I remembered happening in the crash. So I really appreciate his speaking out in the manner he did.
What do you remember happening on the craft?
Well, it was rather devastating, to say the least.
Do you feel comfortable enough to tell me a little bit about it?
Well, I can get into it. It'd take a while to explain, because the location that they're showing is not the real location where it took place. What you really want to see has to do with the shooting or the blasting site. You'll find that debris would be at that location, and that's not, the ranch is another area, and it's some more symbolism too. But what's important is the shooting it down due to we're trying to force down the Corona craft. It had body parts in it. We're trying to call attention. There was a pilot in the air at the time.
Now you're saying the craft that crashed had human body parts?
Yes, Corona had body parts in it.
How did you draw that conclusion?
Well, we had analysis. And we've had a lot of technology, although now, that craft
who's,
was...
Who's we? United States?
Oh, no. Oh,
okay.
No, they have nothing to do with...
Explain this to the listeners.
Well, my background was Pleiaden, and it's not pronounced correctly on the U.S. manner of pronouncing it. But what is important is that my background is not really of importance. It's the message that's important. And when you say...
And what is the message exactly from Roswell?
The Roswell is here to help you help yourself. And when people do not want you to have that information, then you want to ask them, why not?
Well, do you have an answer to that question, why not?
Yes.
And what is that?
Certain control factors. Think the ones that are putting themselves in control.
Are we talking like an MJ-12 or?
Much beyond that.
Who's in control here? Who wants the control?
You're going to get to the Council of the Nine, which you're never really told about. You remember the pinnacle of the pyramid? It has to do with that. The very top echelon of the pyramidal structure are actually in control. Bush is not in control. Cheney is not in control. And even for the top of the Jesuits, they're not really in control. They just would like to think they are, and they're going according to that, thinking that this is the way to the new world order, this is the way to the new dawning events, and they're trying to use what is actually supposed to happen in a totally twisted manner and opposite of what should be.
When we talk about this... What can we do 60 years later here? I mean, what's happening here? I mean, what is your overall message?
Well, okay. Notice,
you said the message was the thing.
The message has to do with coming of fruition of Revelations 20, 1, 2, and 3. It is very spiritual oriented. And also part of the message is even the King James Bible has been tainted by man. You need to reprocess and go through every word and add the rest of it back in. God does not approve of 66 books.
Now, where do you go from Roswell? Back to Washington or what?
Seattle, Washington, yes. My program is Call for Investigation on the Internet each Thursday at 5 Pacific time. And we have covered the issues that the mass media does not cover.
Now, what internet station is this on?
That just go to ScanTV, that's scantv.org, and you will find it video streaming on Thursdays at 5 p.m.
Okay, and we'll link to that. We thank you for coming by.
Thank you so much.
Okay, let's give her a hand, everybody. And we'll watch for you on the tube.
All right.
It's Jerry Pippin. We'll be right back. I would like to take this opportunity to talk to you about a vacation idea for this summer, or really any time, that is unique, different, and affordable. I'm talking about a tour of the Grand Canyon in a van with Marvelous Marv, the world-famous tour guide. Marvelous Marv has lived in the Grand Canyon area for well over two decades, and he will show you things that no other tour guide will, and all the while fill you in on the history and the mystery of the giant canyon itself. When you go on a tour with Marv, you get to see the best viewpoints and the best exhibits. He knows this canyon. He knows this area of Arizona. Now on this page, there's a banner you can click on, and it will take you to Marv's website, where you can get all the answers about Marv and his Grand Canyon tour. This is a vacation you will treasure forever. Check it out, won't you? Marvelous Marv. Well, here we're in Roswell, and of course at the Cover-Up Cafe, Mike Shoup. How are you? You're from Seattle?
From Seattle.
And is this your first time to Roswell?
First time I've ever stopped here.
So what's your impression?
I like alien atmospheres.
It's very interesting. You came to Roswell. You must have an alien-related story.
Oh, definitely.
Well, tell us.
Well, it's really long and involved, but I'll try to cut to the quick, and that is basically that back in 1982, I experienced the alien abduction attempts. And
this up in Washington State?
Yeah.
Okay.
And also experienced, in effect, talking to them, and then, of course, they weren't moving their lips, so I mean, I'm sitting there going, they're not moving their lips, and yet I hear their voice. And they told
now,
me.
Were these humanoid type people, or were they little grays?
The humanoid
types. And you were hearing them speak, but they weren't moving their lips.
Right, exactly.
And what happened exactly?
Well, it's a long story. I don't know if you've ever heard of COINTELPRO. Have you ever heard of what that is?
Tell our audience, because none of them.
All right, COINTELPRO. Is to destroy the leadership of any group, organization, people, or persons that could cause the overthrow of the U.S. government as constituted. And I basically became a target. And there was attempts on my life, etc.
Really?
So I sought higher power for protection.
What have you had any incidents recently, or is this...
Of attempts on my life, or...
of all of this, right. Either, or...
Well, it's like it's an ongoing. It's like I'm not sure if you remember or know about like spirit helpers, and some people say
sure.
they're demonic
yeah, well,
or
we've
whatever.
We've done shows about that.
And if you get it's kind of like a good phone conversation with the proper ones. You know, like you're hooked into the source, you get a lot better information. Mm-hmm. And so it depends on who, in effect, is helping you. And there's been situations where. I was protected and made it so that I could survive where other people didn't survive.
Now, you talk about these things, and you're very matter-of-fact in your voice when you talk about them.
Well,
But they had to be, I don't know if traumatic would be the right word. They had to excite you a little.
Well, it's kind of like once you see or experience something that's out of the normal mm-hmm. range of experiences... And then you go, well, that's here. Well, what else is here? And when you start realizing that there's other things, the things that go bump in the night, et cetera, then you get to a point where you're going, just what is happening here?
And we're in search of answers like the Holy Grail. Did you find any answers?
Yeah.
What
I was shown. I was shown.
And what did they show you exactly?
Well... They show me the truth.
Okay. It's still a very an emotional thing for you to talk
exactly.
about.
Exactly. And it's kind of like the reason why people will not accept what's happening is because it's too much. It's like explaining to Pat earlier, looking into the mirror and seeing somebody staring back at you that's not you. And it's very traumatic. It's
sure
much
it
better
is.
To take the blue pill and not the red pill. And I'm speaking in kind of a convoluted argument.
Yeah.
But I mean, when people really understand why we're here, what we're here for, and what we're doing, then they can understand why.
Yeah, I understand.
TV show I do in Seattle.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Let's talk about that.
Well, anyway, it's like the one night that I was arrested by the so-called police, and I told them that they were servants of the devil, and it's time to close the circle. And so after that, I started my TV program, and I've just had the 161st show. Actually, 160 shows to 1 hour programs. And I started out kind of light, you know.
You do that once a week?
Once a week.
Okay.
But it's a way to bring about the whole realm of what's going on.
So you've been 160 some odd shows.
Plus I helped with Pat's
program. Right, so you've been doing it at least 3 years.
Yeah.
What's the reaction to your show over this time?
Well, it isn't so much the reaction. It's just this information needs to get out. Okay, it's my job to get
this is your mission at this point.
Well, it's one of my missions. I mean, I've been involved in all kinds of protests. I've been involved in Native American affairs. I've been involved in ecology. I've been involved in like the blockade of the Trident submarine in 1982. I mean, basically, they went after me, and I said, okay, you guys want to go after me? I'm going to go after you.
Okay. As you know, you do a TV show yourself, but we have time limitations, and we've been going a long time here, so we have lots of guests on.
Oh, I know.
So we will only have a couple of minutes more. Is there something that you'd like to bring out for our listeners that you do on your TV show that we... Is it available on the web, too, or just on the cable?
Well, it's available on video streaming, and sometimes it's available, you know, like if somebody gets one of my copies of my DVDs. But it's not, you know, uncommon knowledge of, you know, what it's all about.
Well, before you leave, you're going to have to tell us how to link to it.
Oh, scantv.org. And
when are you on?
On 4 o'clock on Friday.
That's Pacific time.
Yeah, so it'd be 5 o'clock.
And so forth. Okay, and it's Scan TV.
SCANTV. .org. And we're one of the...
ScanTV.com or...
.org.
.org, okay. Go ahead.
You kept asking the people, what's the mission? You know, what's the outcome?
Right.
And basically, it's we are all one. And... Here
now, are you talking about we are all one, as in the common consciousness?
Oh no, let's take it not just from the Earth, but go to cosmic.
Okay.
In other words, all the various alien groups, whatever you want to call them, all over the universe, and this war that's been going on for eons—I mean, way beyond eons—and that it's come to Earth is, in effect, coming to fruition here. The people that were involved in the battles and what have you that have reincarnated here. Are at the point now where instead of fighting, they're negotiating.
Now, your show, they can check it out. Do you have guests? Yeah,
I've got like 3 guests that I usually have on the program, and then I in effect, teach in the spirit. In other words, each week I try to come up with something new, and I use numerology as a teaching aid that I was shown. And anyway, it's like A is 1, B is 2, C is 3, down to Z is 26, and you take the words that are in the dictionary and find out that they have meaning, that it was put in there a long time ago. And it's like Lord Jesus Christ adds to 200, Lord adds to 49, Jesus adds to 74, and Christ adds to 77. And there were, like in the book of Enoch, there were 200 fallen angels. And the word catch 22 adds to 200 also. And if you look up the 22nd verse, Psalms,
mm-hmm.
It's, Father, Father, why hast thou forsaken me? And when Jesus was on the cross, he was giving the Sermon on the Mount, in mm-hmm. effect. And I said that it's Sermon on the Cross. And it's like Hiroshima Hospital. Hiroshima adds to 100. Hospital adds to 100. So there's another 200. And what were the weapons that were used back in time? Nuclear. If you go to the area of Sumer. They refer to that as the place of the rockets, which is over in the Middle East. There are areas there that have the sand was turned to glass, and it's still there. Ancient wars that have occurred throughout the universe.
200, what's the significance of that number?
Well, in the book of Enoch, E-N-O-C-H, there were 200 fallen angels. And that 200 keeps coming up in the numerology all the time. Like if you go to if you take the book of Genesis and count the number of verses, and when you get to 200, you'll find out that that was where they were told to leave the ark. And when you get to the 202nd verse, you'll find out that's when they left the ark. And it's like Richard Hoagland talks about 19.5. Well, if you do 19.5 in numerology, you'll find out that equals 202. And if you do the word transformations, transformations equals 202. And it's all tied together. There's this code that was written long ago.
Does this have anything to do with the date that everybody talks about, 2012?
Oh, yeah. It all ties together. Matter of fact, I was talking with Richard tonight, and I don't want to divulge what he said to me, in effect, because I gave him that information.
Sure.
And he said, yes, we've been working on this code, and we realize it all ties together. And I told him that I'd, in effect, broken the code and found out, you know, what it all means.
We could talk for hours, but as I said, we have time constraints. Thanks for coming on. Scan TV, the name of the show again.
Closing the Circle.
Closing the Circle. Thanks
and
very much.
And if you go Closing the Fire Circle, that
equals, I bet you that gets
that
to
200. Equals 200.
I just had a hunch. Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Tales of the Strange and the Unknown. Every month in Fate Magazine.
Fate!
Fate Magazine has actually been published continuously since 1948. That makes it the longest-running publication of its kind. From psychics and spiritualists, archaeological hotspots and fringe science, to authoritative UFO and paranormal investigations, Fate articles are factual, informative, and entertaining. Subscribe to Fate Magazine today. Simply go to FateMag.com, FateMag.com, or check it out at your local newsstand. Fate Magazine is a favorite for people looking for answers and for people looking for entertainment.
Fate.
Tales of the Strange and the Unknown.
You know, I feel like Travis Walton, that you're a member of the family. We keep meeting all the time. David Ray, how are you?
I'm Don Ray Walton.
Yeah, Don Ray.
And
misspoke there, sorry. It's been a long day, as you noted.
Yeah.
Well. It's Don Ray Walton, and let's welcome him to the Cover Up Cafe. Phyllis Galdi, a dear friend of ours, is publishing your book, and you already have a name for it, huh?
That's right. It's called The Coming Human Aliens, Fact or Fiction.
And when will this be coming out?
It's either the end of this month or
fairly soon.
Yeah, fairly soon, within the next couple of months.
Now,
for sure.
You've been on other shows with us, some of our regular listeners know about your story, and we'll get into a little bit of that. But first of all, I want to note, CNN was talking to you today. Other people were talking to you. You did the demonstration you did on camera for them. You plug yourself into a wall socket.
Yeah, for 7 minutes.
And it doesn't bother you?
No, it doesn't affect me.
And why is that?
Well, because I'm a little different than most people.
Yeah, and tell our audience, what do you mean by that?
Well, I'm a hybrid.
And how do you know that?
In 1954, a UFO landed in my mother's backyard, and less than a year later, I was born while her husband was doing a tour in the Navy. We lost the farm and everything because my mom's husband thought that she had cheated on him.
Yeah, and we went through that story, and they can listen to it from our Eureka Springs show. But you found out you had, I don't want to call them supernatural things, but I guess they really are. If you can plug yourself into a wall socket, if you can drink gasoline.
Well, I can do a lot of things other people in normal people can't do.
I mean,
because
you even drink battery acid once in a while, I think.
Yeah,
what's the story on that?
Well, I was 19 years old, and I was working on a Dodge Charger. I had built a police interceptor. I souped it up, and I put a 12-inch crescent on the radiator, and as I leaned over to turn the distributor to time it, I had it at 6,000 RPM, and I knocked the 12-inch crescent into the radiator and came back, and it hit my teeth and cracked my teeth all the way across and everything. I was in so much pain, I grabbed a battery. I poured it in my mouth, but I burnt my eyes, and it was just it's in the book, actually.
Yeah, but you can still see.
Oh, yeah.
You can still
yeah.
talk.
Of course.
You still got the ability to eat, so you recovered.
Oh, yeah.
And in fact, how do you attribute this? I guess because you say you're a hybrid.
Also because I'm the seventh son of a seventh son of a seventh daughter. And if you notice, today was the...
We're doing on 777.
That's right. Even Phyllis noticed that.
That's the reason we asked you to come by here.
Yeah.
You're the seventh son of the... Go through that again.
I'm the seventh son of a seventh son of a seventh daughter. I don't have a father. I was artificially inseminated.
Yeah, on board ship.
On board a ship, yes.
And are you saying that the male sperm was an alien?
I can't define that because it was in a needle, and my mom, that's all she remembers.
So you don't know exactly.
And in fact, she didn't know she was being impregnated at the time. She just thought they were doing some weird tests on her.
Right. You've been busy here in Roswell. I see you all the time. Tell me what's happening.
Well, I've been interviewed by about 12 different people now, and I've got Enchantment TV. They put me in New Mexico, Enchantment TV. They got a 20-minute interview with me on there, and they wanted to talk about my book and what was going on. And they wanted to know what happened on that aura machine because they were watching, and they couldn't believe that.
And tell our listeners what we're talking about here. There's an aura machine there at the festival in the Civic Center, and something unusual happened with you. Tell me about that.
Well, Fate Magazine wanted to do a cover-up story on me on that aura machine. They wanted to see what was really making me tick, because they didn't understand how I could take 110 volts right straight out of the wall through an extension cord like that right straight into my body. Well, they did it before, and then they did one after I charged
minutes. This is before you came in the room. You charged yourself up today right in the room we were.
Yeah, yes.
In the studio.
Yes, I did that. Where I did in that room. 7 minutes straight.
Yeah,
right through the heart.
So they took one of these photos of the aura before
you
went in there.
Yeah, and then they took
one before.
And what
did it look like?
And it was just normal aura, but then when I charged up with the electricity, it turned red, and there was a lot of things running around, and there was actually a picture of an alien behind my shoulder in there, and it freaked the guy out so bad he almost shut the machine down. So then they wanted to, they grounded me.
Wait a minute. You're going a little fast for me, Don. This is the second picture or the third picture?
Second one.
Okay. The second one, all of a sudden.
Yeah, it freaked him out.
It's way out. The vibes are,
yeah.
It's gone nuts, and you have an ET behind you.
Yeah, then they wanted to ground me to see if it was the electricity causing the effect. So they grounded me and dropped electricity out of me, and then the aura got brighter.
How do they do that? Ground you?
Well, put me on the machine.
I've never grounded a person.
They put me on the machine, and all the electricity on my body ran into it. Anyways, the third picture came out even brighter, and I lit up so much that it lit up without the machine around my head, and it freaked them out. They said, this guy's probably the real deal. He says, I never believed in aliens before, but he said, I think I do now.
Well, are you more than a half-breed?
Well, let's put it this way. I'm a messenger, more or less.
Okay.
I'm here to bring a message to this world.
Do you think you're a complete alien?
I'm not an alien as you would know. I'm only an alien because I'm not from your world. See, though I'm of your world, I'm not from it.
So your mother naturally was human.
Of course, yes. I'm half human, basically.
Now you've really been moving around. Yeah, we've had you sing the song on another show, so we won't ask you to do that again.
Now that's good. Yeah,
but it was neat. What's happening with your life here? What are you doing here?
I mean, well, I don't know. I seem to have a lot of producers calling my agent and my publisher.
So in other words, you're interested in maybe a movie career or something?
Well, I don't know what she's got planned for me, but I signed a contract and whatever
game,
she wants
huh?
to set up. Not a problem.
Okay. Well, basically you're out making personal appearances at this point.
Yeah, see, it's not the money that counts to me. It's the matter of the message getting across to the
and
people.
And that's what I'm getting to, Dom. What is the message? Well, I mean, when a guy drinks gasoline, plugs himself into
oh,
the wall.
Oh, no, no, that's not. That's got nothing to do with it. That's just some of the things I experience here because I'm kind of like a probe. I kind of test everything out.
Okay. And the message?
The message is not to blow the hell out of the earth with atomic weapons and destroy it with a plan that the aliens have against the earth by using the humans to do it with themselves so that they don't have to mess with you in space.
Okay. Now, hold on. We'll see. Anyone here want to ask this man something? I mean, I saw him plug himself into a wall, and he didn't glow. It just kind of... anybody have a question for Don? Anybody? Let me get untangled. Okay, Jane, pick it back up. We're now back with the TV personality.
Hello, Don. What is your birthday?
My birthday?
Mm-hmm.
10/20/55.
Okay. And what do you know about the core meaning of Roswell?
The core meaning of Roswell is that they were shot down on their way here to warn Earth about the message that I was trying to give them. I was kind of a drop-off point afterwards. By the other crew that didn't get shot down by their own kind. They were shot down by their own kind while they were trying to deliver a message.
Well,
basically, they came here to help you.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Hey, Don, do you still really drink some of that gasoline?
No. My girlfriend made me quit drinking bleach and gasoline and turpentine and all that stuff.
Why did you ever try that?
Huh?
Why did you try that to begin
with? Well, see, when I was riding Harley-Davidson, I used to eat raw meat all the time. You don't have a place to cook, and I didn't want to get worms, so I'd drink whatever is handy to kill the worms.
So you literally kerosene, gasoline, anything?
It doesn't
like
matter.
That.
Just anything to eliminate the parasites
when
from
I,
my body.
When you were here the other day, I told Roberta, our producer, I said, I smell a distinct gasoline odor. I think Don's back on it.
No, I'm not. No.
Yeah. Okay. Folks, if you're listening, don't try it. He survived it, but I'm not sure. And I don't know about this plug-in. You sure that's not a carny trick?
No, it's no carny.
You don't have a little secret gadget
no.
or something?
No.
This is a real deal.
That's a real deal.
You got anything else to close? We're almost out of time.
Well, I can only say that the message that is in the book, The Coming Human Aliens, Fact or Fiction, is for the whole world, not just for... just for Roswell or people in Roswell. It's for the whole world to understand the meaning of why I was really sent here from the Orion Star System.
Let's plug the book one more time. Phyllis is a buddy of ours. We need to make sure you sell a few copies. I imagine you might could use a little the revenue from royalties, so you're probably ready for it too. What about this book? It's going to come out... either this month or next month, the name of it again is...
Within the next couple of months for sure. Yeah. She's investing $10,000 into the covers and into the pictures and everything to make it look good.
She goes first class.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about the name of the book again.
It's called The Coming Human Aliens, Fact or Fiction by Don Ray Walton. I'm Travis Walton's cousin.
And it's Galdi Press, and it'll be available at every bookstore, wherever you want it. We have a link to it on our website as well. Let's give Don Ray Walton a big hand before he gets back on the gasoline habit. Always a pleasure to talk to him.
We'll be right back in a moment. This is Jerry Pickett.
The year was 1970 when Jack Blanchard and Misty Morgan released their first big single hit, Tennessee Birdwalk. For the first time in the history of music, this 45 RPM single becomes available to the public in the form of a mouse pad. Made of high-quality quarter-inch rubber, this fabric-covered 8-inch mouse pad delivers your mouse a very smooth ride. For only $9.95 plus $2.50 shipping and handling, your mouse pad will be rushed via USPS first-class mail. Simply click on the happy little mice and be directed to our ordering page. Hurry while this limited time offer lasts.
It's interesting when you come to Roswell, you meet all kinds of interesting people with a lot of dedication. And you rode a Greyhound bus out here, right?
For 2 days and nights.
And the reason you came to Roswell was to find out more information?
Fulfill my dream of telling you people what I had witnessed in 62 and 63.
Let's talk a little bit about those. They happened in what county in Georgia?
Lowndes. L-O-W.
Now, where is that exactly?
7 miles. It's at Valdosta. It's a county seat.
Now, you have a newspaper background. You worked in the composing department, I guess is what we call it, when they used to use the lead, and they pour the molten lead and make the paper.
I sure did, for 10 years.
That's an interesting job, and it was not easy. It was heavy. Those plates were heavy.
It was a lot of work.
Yeah.
And not too good a pay.
Yeah. Well, that's journalism for you. Yeah. tell me about your sightings.
Well, first I want to tell you about this rocket of fire.
Yeah, okay. Let's hear about that.
Well, I was standing out behind my house one night about the latter part of March, and all of a sudden I heard this awful noise about 200 yards over in the corner of the field. It sounded like the old-timey big window fans in factories.
Yeah.
Before they air conditioned. About 20. Sounded like 20. And it rose up, had a head on it as large as a beach ball. The body was as large around as a man's body and 6 or 7 feet long. And it crashed in my field. I went over there the next morning, and there was just a few little flimsy ashes.
But everything else was gone and burned up or whatever?
Yes, sir.
What do you make of that rocket of fire?
I never have figured it out.
Well, did anybody else see it?
No, sir. I called my wife to the door. She missed seeing it, but she saw the flashlight that came down the other side of my property.
Now, right after that, you had a UFO sighting, I think. Next year?
Yes, sir.
Tell me about that.
It was about the same time of the year.
What time of the year was that?
The latter part of March.
Okay.
The fields hadn't been planted. And my brother-in-law, he was about 14 years old. We'd been sitting at the dinner table talking about that what I had seen the previous year. And I said, let's go out and look for a flying saucer. We went out. We hadn't been in the yard hardly 5 minutes, but here come a beautiful creation. It looked like it was 35 or 40 feet in circumference. And there was a bright little glow of light extending from the entire surface of it, and it came from towards Tallahassee, Florida, or Thomasville, Georgia, and was headed in a northeasterly direction towards Savannah or Charleston. We saw it, and we heard the motor to it. The motor is a low hum.
A little hum, huh?
Yes, sir.
Like a low-range hum, or...?
Low-range hum.
No.
And it was just barely over the Georgia pine tree tops.
Wow.
We saw it about 8 to 10 seconds before it speeded up and left that area. It was going approximately 70 miles an hour when it come over the corner of my 3 acres.
Well, we appreciate you coming a long way on a Greyhound bus to tell us a story. What do you think of Roswell?
It's fantastic.
Have you had a chance to share your story with people here?
You're the first.
Yeah.
I've talked to 2 or 3 people around in businesses and 2 or 3 over here this morning.
Well, we appreciate you coming all the way from Georgia on a Greyhound bus, and thanks for telling us your sighting. I wish I could help you more on the information.
Yeah.
Like everybody else, we don't know.
Yeah.
What do you think it was?
I was a doubting Thomas before that night.
Mm-hmm.
These people flying those piloting those UFOs flying saucers. I bet you could have put a dozen people in it. It's so large.
Wow. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Jerry.
It came a long ways.
Yes, sir.
Let's give him a big hand. Came on a Greyhound bus. I'm Jerry Pippin. We're at the Cover Up Cafe in Roswell.
Major sighting here. On the 13th of March. Weird happenings in the skies over Phoenix recently. And no one seems to be able to explain what it was.
And now.
Suddenly 6 amber orbs in a row, totally equidistant from each other, massive span across, pop up.
People say they saw strange lights.
A series of strange bright lights seen over the skies of Arizona gets a lot of people wondering.
There are another 10,000 Arizonans who saw the same thing.
Eyewitnesses who saw it say it's like nothing they've ever seen before.
Last night, shortly after 8 p.m., hundreds, maybe thousands of Arizonans reported seeing a triangular-shaped object with 3 to 6
thousands of people saw more than stars in the night sky.
The mystery remains unsolved and controversial.
There was nothing to
report. The award-winning documentary by Dr. Lynn Kitar, The Phoenix Lights, is now available from shopjerrypippin.com. Order now. Supplies limited.
I'm Jerry Pippin, and David Solomon is with us, and you spell that differently.
Yes, sir. It is the Scottish spelling, but I'm not the only one that spells it S-A-L-O-M-E-N in the Nacogdoches, Texas area. So it's the same old wise king. You just, you know, flip the vowels.
I believe that you wrote me an email about this.
Yes, I tell you. It has taken me 1 year of affirmation therapy in order to rejoin the human race, and I found that I thought that it must be, it would be cathartic if I would email you and tell you what happened, because this was not supposed to happen to
me. Well, let's explain to the audience what we're talking about here.
Okay, in the evening, January 9, 2006, in a forest area north of Nacogdoches, Texas, I was confronted by an entity that I did not even know existed on this planet. He said, "May I connect with you?"
Like that.
And I was frozen. It was an E. coli moment, Jerry.
What does the entity look like?
He was 4 feet tall. He had a pronounced cranium, huge eyes, and a very small nose and mouth. And he was flying something over there, sir, that looked like a one-piece hat that was bigger than my house. And he was already in the forest. I just rounded the bend. There he was.
And he was standing outside the craft?
Oh, he was standing outside the craft. The craft was underneath, as you know, already know, because I know you got kinfolk down there.
Right.
That craft was underneath overhanging trees. And, you know, we got them up to 80 feet tall.
Yeah, that sounds a whole lot like the area around Kecksburg where that thing happened.
Absolutely. I think they like forest areas. You know, Travis Walton had his encounter with these individuals.
Yeah, that's right. And he said he wanted to connect with you.
May I connect with you? That is his. I cannot forget that.
Was it an actual voice coming out of his mouth, or
it was something that was happening in my speech center?
Okay.
Our speech center is behind our left ear, right here in this area. He did not make one move toward me. He stayed absolutely motionless. But Jerry, he told me to turn to the right, and he turned to the right and got within distance to where I could get my hand. He told me to reach out and grab his hand. I was too frightened to grab his hand. I grabbed his wrist, and I squeezed, and I'm telling you, the bones gave way as though they were hard but spongy. And when I let go, it came back, and Jerry, it has taken me 1 year of affirmation therapy in order for me to even come here. Because, sir, this was the scariest moment of my entire life.
Did you hurt him when you did that?
No.
He just was pliable.
He wanted me to know, and he told me to do that, so I would not only have a visual record, but that I would have a tactile record that he was a living, breathing biologic. And Jerry, they don't like the fact that we call them extraterrestrials.
I'm sure they don't.
Because what he wanted to tell me, and what he did tell me, was that he was a catoctonius. And I bet there's not one in 1,000 of your listeners know what that is, but I know that because I've been a Bible student and a Bible teacher since 1969. I knew instantly where he was referring to because this word is only used one time in the entire New Testament. And it is where the Apostle Paul in Philippians 2, chapter 2, verse 10, tells what the entities are. And he points out the entities Epiranias, entities Epigios, and entities Catoctonius. Now, I knew instantly what he meant, but until that moment in January 9, it was not clear, because catoctonius is from two Greek words, kata meaning down from, and kathanos, C-H-T-H-O-N-O-S, means ground. And he told me that he was a member of the subterranean civilizations that the Apostle Paul wrote about. And not only did he tell me that term, but he pointed out that he was also the hupokatogahe. That is another term that is used only two times in the book of Revelation. And that book is, that's another one of these terms where the verse in chapter 5 of Revelation, verse 3 and verse 13, describes the entities. In John's recounting of Revelation, you got Uranus entities. In Philippians, it's Epiranias. That's just the adjective form. Uranus means the celestial sphere above the sidereal. If you were to go to a Bible lexicon, that's the definition you would read. And then it talked about entities gehe. Now, gehe is the word for territory with fixed boundaries. But in the book of Revelation, which deals with the Roman Empire and its effect on Christianity and what eventually is going to happen with the burning of the whore, which is the church, which is the city of Rome built on seven hills and so forth. I knew what he was talking about. And then that next classification, look, he's going from the top bottom, Kathanos, down here to the third one was not catoctonius. It's said a different way. That term is hupokatogahe. Now that's spelled H-U-P-O-K-A-T-O-G-E. And hupo means under, and
Kato, K-A-T-O, means down, down, beneath, and Gehe refers to the Roman Empire. So you should be asking me, are you telling me that he was telling you that they've got underground cities underneath the Roman Empire? So I could...
And your answer is?
Absolutely. And then comes the fourth turn. Now here's where our usologists should get really excited. Those people that talk about things coming out of the sea, because the fourth term describing entities is the word thalassa. Now, any listener that's familiar with Greek mythology will recognize the term thalassa as being the name of a primordial goddess and the embodiment of the Mediterranean Sea. So what it says in Revelation 5:13 is, they've got a city under the Mediterranean Sea, and he told me they do. And if anybody sweeps the area like they do looking for Nessie, they would never be heard from again.
So is this this entity, in your mind, evil or good?
He is, and that's why he could talk to me. He said that we worship Jesus as our creator. That's exactly what he said. And
now, do you have an evangelistic...
When you use evangelism, you're going to... I don't want people to think of me. I am what you call a Calvinist preterist. Calvinism means you believe in TULIP, total depravity, limited atonement, and so forth. I am not a Pat Robertson type. I am not a Billy Graham type. A Calvinist is someone who believes in predestination, and preterist means that you believe that the 666 of Revelation was Nero.
Let me ask you this much. Why did you have such a problem with this for the year?
Because, Jerry, he did not look like you. If you were there, I could have been fine with it. If she was there, I could have been
fine. Well, I look like an angel, but no.
Well,
no.
You but, sir, and by the way, I'm going to echo what Mac Brazel said. They're not green. This individual looked like I used to raise critters and gave them to Jerry's pets all over the state of New Mexico. One of those critters was chinchillas. And anybody who knows a chinchilla knows that they have this little dust that they like to roll around in because it keeps all the mites and everything off to them. That is a light, ashy gray, and that's what he looked like. And he was wearing a red one-piece thing that went from the neck to the foot, and he said that it was not pressing against his skin, and that they can take this thing at the neck and pull it apart and quickly go out of it because they are the cleanest things, evidently, on earth. Now, Jerry would have to talk for a while, but he told me Roswell. He told me exactly what happened at Roswell.
What did he tell you?
He said, and he told me this, he prefaced it with this remark, believe what I tell you and don't believe anyone else. I'm going to do it my own way because I can't remember word for word that whole spiel. But this is exactly what he said. July 1947, lightning struck a 38-foot diameter, flat-bottomed, hat-shaped disc. And immediately it disabled the emergency beacon that did not alert the underground dwellers, the rest of the Greys down there, that they were in trouble. Now, you remember the Shag Harbor incident?
Yes.
In that incident, the emergency beacon was not disabled. Therefore, another craft of the Catoctonius came into the harbor, came down there, and divers saw one entity get out, and he was helping replace a component part. In this case, the first thing to go was the emergency beacon. And he said it set up a cascade of failures which caused this flat-bottom disc to crash into the ground. Now, when it hit the surface, he said the brim of the hat did exactly what it was designed to do. It acted like a car bumper and left a debris field a mile long. The inner oblong-shaped cocoon containing four Magnus and all the technology was jettisoned and slammed into the desert some distance away.
So this is the reason you came to Roswell this year?
Any of us that go through traumatic experiences need to talk about it. If we keep it bottled up, we become isolation. We withdraw from our family. If my children could hear this, they don't know this. The most recent thing I did was I was a pastor, interim pastor, for a Baptist church in North Street in Nacogdoches, Texas. And I preached from churches from Napa, California to Atlanta, Georgia. And if the Calvinist community found out that this happened to me, they'd think I was bonkers until I could explain to them the Hupokatoge and all of those scriptures that talk about these underground people that breathe oxygen. And let me just tell you what he told me.
Okay.
This is the bottom line. They are about to intrude, and he used the word intrude, into ABO affairs. ABO, Jerry, that's you and me. We who have ABO blood types, and their biology is much different. And he said they are going to come out in mass and target the engines of transportation vehicles, land, sea, and air, military, commercial, and private, and reduce them to scrap iron because they are belching out carbon dioxide into the atmosphere, their atmosphere. And this endangers the Catoctonia's lifespan, and this will not stand. And that last exactly what he said.
You know, we corresponded, and I got an email from you and everything, and thanks for coming by and telling us in person about it. And what are you going to, what's the message we should take from this?
The message we should take is that we need to understand what happened in 1952. What happened in 1952 was, if you want to know about the B-47, when's the last time it flew? First time it flew, 47. When's the first time the B-52 flew? 1952. And what happened in July of 1952? They came and parked over the Capitol. Why? Because Ivy Mike was just months away from being detonated. And Ivy Mike was the hydrogen device of Edward Teller. And what they were doing is just telling everybody, we have a stake in what you are doing.
Thank you very much, David.
Appreciate you, sir. Thank you.
Okay. Do you have a website or anything?
I do not, sir.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yes, sir.
We'll be right back in a moment. This is Jerry Pepper.
The doors are finally open at shopjerrypippin.com. Explore our new iShop. It's open and growing. You can use any major credit card or your checking account with our PayPal connection. Our first edition t-shirt selections features three different Jerry Pippin UFO files designs. In addition, we will be adding collector t-shirts from select UFO conferences, as well as several novelty items. Check us out at shopjerrypippin.com.
This is Jerry Pippin. We're at the Cover Up Cafe in Roswell. And Terry Lee, how are you?
Very good, Jerry. Good to see you. Thank you.
You're pretty famous for. Did you actually drive the horse and carriage up to the White House, the stagecoach or whatever it was?
It's a standard Amish buggy. As close as I could get was outside the fence on the south lawn of the White House in 2000. That's as close as I got then.
Are you Amish?
No, I am not.
Okay. The reason I ask you, have the hat.
Well, it's... it's a trademark.
Yeah, good.
This is a picture of me there, of course.
Did you build this? It looks like an old-time stagecoach, really, but I guess it's like Cinderella's carriage.
Standard Amish buggy.
Yeah.
Two-seated. The Amish drive these.
Did you truck that to Washington, or did you...
I drove that from New Mexico here.
Where in New Mexico did you leave?
I left from Roswell here
okay.
in July of of 2000.
Well, when a man does something like this, you're a man on a mission. Tell us a little bit about it.
Okay, this is has turned into my personal peace mission. It's called Pulling for Peace. In 2000, I took three wreaths up to Washington, D.C. I left one at Arlington National Cemetery, one at the Vietnam Veterans Memorial, and then one at the National Fallen Firefighters Memorial. Of course, I am a veteran. I served 68-69, and this has been my way of giving back to the service people that I have served with, and my own personal.
We're fairly short of time here, so
okay,
we have to kind of cut to the chase. What would you like to bring out in this interview for the audience?
What I'd like to do is that these journeys in the past, 2000 up to the present, I've done by myself. This time I'm would like to offer an opportunity for the communities and for the people across.
Do you have a website?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
And I can. I have an old website that's currently going to be reconstructed for, of course.
So you're going to get some money and do what with it?
Well, I'm going to drive my horse and buggy from New Mexico to Washington, D.C. I'll be taking a different route than I did last time. I will still be doing this same thing. I will be putting together wreaths.
Now, when you went in 2000, what route did you take?
I went from here up to northeastern New Mexico, over into Texas, up to Amarillo, up across.
Did you come through Oklahoma?
Yes, I did.
I think you called me on the radio there.
I may have.
Yeah, right. I think I did an interview here one time.
Okay.
Yeah, and in Tulsa.
In Tulsa?
Well, in Muskogee.
Well, that may have been way before in the 80s,
okay,
when I drove a horse and buggy down to Hot Springs, Arkansas.
Okay, I mean, we've ran across our paths someplace in the past.
I'm sure we have.
Okay, so how does the community here take to you?
I'm very well liked throughout the community. It's, not only in my local community up in the Hondo Valley, but all the communities that I travel through, I'm always well received. And
when are you planning on making this next trip?
I plan to leave in late May,
of
next year. I still have this year's journey yet to complete, which I will do in November.
This year's journey, where's that going?
It will be going from the Hondo Valley up to the Veterans Memorial up in Rio Doso. I have done just about all the local memorials.
When you go a long distance like this, pulling something like this, that's pretty tough on the horses, isn't it?
I generally take at least two horses. This time I will be taking three horses along with me. Also, this time I've was asked to put together a memorial and monument to honor the veterans and service people who have died in Afghanistan and in Iraq since the war began in 2002 up to the present, and that is what I intend to do. I'm going to put together a marble monument, and I'm going to pull this monument back to Washington, D.C. with a team of horses as well.
Derry, thanks a lot for coming by and talking to us. Is there anything else you'd like to say before we go?
I'd just like to invite all the service people to get in touch with me and show their support for this project, and people will be hearing about me from now up until I get ready to leave next year.
Okay, thank you very much for coming by.
Thank you.
You didn't ride your carriage here, did you?
No.
Okay.
No, I don't.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jerry. Okay.
I want to take a moment to talk to you about astrology. We all enjoy reading astrology in the newspaper. love, life in general. But I want to talk to you about Cece Stevens. She's in Arizona, and she is really a top-notch astrologer. And she does something a little different, and I think you should know about it. She offers to her customers the Book of You for only $35. Literally, this is a book about you. I don't really have time in a radio commercial to go into all of the details of why you should consider ordering the Book of You. So I urge you to click on this banner that's on this page with the show and check it out. And you can order it for $35. Check, credit card, whatever. This is a great gift idea, too, so order now.
Hey, we're here at the Cover Up Cafe. I'm Jerry Pippin, and we're broadcasting from Roswell. It's the 60th anniversary, and a lot of people drop by. The lady who does the Discovery Channel website was just here, and checking out a lot of media. 250 major media passes were given out to this entire little affair that goes on and on. We start early in the morning, and we walk around like zombies at 10 or 11. And when I call it quits and check out, there's still people going, I tell you. Bill McGowan, you're probably one of those guys.
I'm one of them, yeah.
Keep on.
I know, just keep on going.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about your book, A Diary of a Psychic Visionary.
Yes.
And we've had you on before?
Yes, I was over there in Eureka Springs, Arkansas, right. You know, a few months ago.
And we talked a little bit about it at that time, but let's get into a little more detail this time.
Okay.
Tell me a little bit about why you come to these things.
Okay, well, I come to these for a lot of reasons. One thing, I do believe that the aliens are here, but and I have written a book here. I know I've been abducted since I was around 5 years old. And I think it stopped several years ago, but right now I'm 65 years old. Need a little bit louder around. So anyway, you know, I just had an awful lot happening. And when we lived out in the country outside of Birmingham, Alabama, we lived about 35 miles from Birmingham. And we had, you know, a pretty good little drive to go down there. And in that time frame, we had missing time. I had a wife and four children, and I know one time we was driving from Birmingham back to down around Vinson, Alabama, and we had missing time there. We arrived at home, and then we found ourselves about 20 miles back up the road going back home again. And this was in the early 70s, and there just wasn't any information about that at the time. So we just kind of scratched our head and kind of blew it away, you know. And then, as time went on, we had more and more, you know, events happening. And like I said, this was in the early 70s, and there wasn't anything written about this. You couldn't find anything on missing time and alien abductions and things like that. But anyway, you know, we went through all that for several years. I had a 30-foot circle of grass out right outside the bedroom window, and it died. And I worked on that for years and years. I went ahead and put a fertilizer on, grass seed, and I tried to get grass to grow. It wouldn't grow. And I didn't know that a UFO might kill grass out there, you know. But I wound up digging it up and putting in more dirt and putting in more grass seed, more fertilizer, and yet it still didn't grow. We was there another 7 years. Whenever we left, there were still only small sprigs of grass growing in that circle. And as time went on, the aliens actually came into my house, and they would, you know, levitate me and do who knows what.
Literally, did you say they were levitating?
Yeah, they would. There was one time in particular, and I got it written up in my book here, and they would pick me up in the air, and they'd turn me sideways, and it would feel like electricity going from my head to my feet.
Now wait, I want to get this picture right.
Yeah.
They made you levitate.
Yes.
And all of a sudden you were facing them, but you turned sideways.
Yeah, they went in and turned
me
sideways.
Like that, huh?
Yeah, they turned me, you know, 90 degrees sideways. I don't know why they did that, but I was up above the bed.
you don't have to wait for this $200 million ride they're making here in Roswell for the theme park, do you? You have one.
No, that's right. I was afraid it's going to take me out the window or through the window. But they didn't do it that night, and I've had several.
But I think you probably did before it was over.
I may have, because, you know, your nerve memory is just kind of erased. and I would try to see a clock. I always had a digital clock, and they would come in sometimes, and it would feel like just 2 minutes went by or whatever, and then when they let me go, it might be 20 minutes, you know, and that happened over and over again. That was when I was living there in Jacksonville, Florida. So there's just so many things that happen.
So in other words, you're saying it just didn't happen in Birmingham?
Oh, no. Okay. No, this happened. It happened there in Jacksonville, Florida, and that was going to put it up into the late 80s. And they had come in my house, and I mean, you know, I've had all kind of strange events with them. But I also had a near-death experience, like in September of 1987. And after that, I had even more things happen. I became very, very psychic. And I kept getting more and more psychic. And I kind of wonder, maybe they was raising my vibration somehow. I just don't know.
Do you have any idea why this was happening to you and not to other people? I mean, your wife, I guess, and family was involved.
They were. We divorced back in 86.
Was this part of the, I don't mean to pry, but was this a problem, part of this, was this part
no,
of
it? No, actually, it wasn't,
so,
yeah.
So everybody was together on what this was?
Oh, yeah. Okay. And but you know, as time went on, living down in Jacksonville, I was down there about 4 years, and I become very, very psychic. I started having visions of, I also had precognitive dreams, and these visions would come true, and also the precognitive dreams would come true. It might take 2 days up to maybe a week, and these things would happen, and I could see it, and then I could see it on the news, you know, 2 days, 4 days, 5 days later. It's exactly what I was showing in my dream.
So in other words, you were getting a future peak.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, older and older, about different, you know, events. So it kept going on, and that went on and on for...
Now, what kind of incidents were you getting this future peak of? I mean, what were you seeing?
Okay, well, mainly these were airplane crashes and ships sinking. And then when this Palestinians and the Israelis over there got into their war.
So, in other words, you had an advance notice of bad events happening.
Oh, yeah. That's mainly what I pick up on. I hate to say that, but I pick up on death and destruction more than I do anything.
You never got to the point where you could look at somebody and say, well, they're not going to be here next week.
I'm afraid I've done some of that, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's why I don't have any friends now. It's just, you know, people say, hey, you know, Bill is psychic. You know, go ask him this, go ask him that. And I had a good friend.
Well, I'm clouding my mind right now. No, go ahead.
But anyway, this friend of mine called me up one night and said that her brother's in the hospital. And he says he's going to be all right. And I said, no, he's going to die within 14 days. And she just could not understand. He said, oh, good. He's going to get better in 14 days. And I said, no, I hate to say it, but he's going to die in 14 days. And she just kept repeating, he's going to be okay. And I said, no. And then, you know, we kind of disconnected there, and he died on the 14th day. And she didn't really speak to me for years. I mean, in a way, they blame you for this. They will think, hey, you said it, so you caused it. And I keep telling them, no, a psychic is here to help you to see the future so you can change it. The future can be changed if you know what's coming.
Now you have the psychic abilities. Have you been out to the crash site? Here?
No, I haven't, no.
It would be great for you to come out to go out there and see if you picked up anything, you know what?
Yeah, I would now, yeah.
I would like to go out to Hangar 84 myself with three or four psychics. And
Oh, yeah.
Well, I think I got to leave early Monday, but when are you leaving?
Just sometime Monday. Just
well, I may get a hold of you. We may get three or four psychics and go out there and see what we can do.
Oh, yeah. Well, I tell you what, you know, I pick up on ghosts real easy. Ghosts and spirits coming around. So that hadn't been a problem picking up on them, you know.
But let's get back to the abductions and all of this. When is the last time you've had something like this happen?
I don't think they've abducted me in the last several years. I think they stopped. And I'm 65 years old, and I think, well, man, maybe I'm too old. And I think, well, let's get somebody young, yeah. But they had abducted me, I'm sure, you know, numerous times. And then my wife is one of the main ones who had missing time, though. And she'd go back and forth to Birmingham to the doctor, take a child in, and it kept taking 4 hours to drive 35 miles back home.
Other members of your family or your wife's family, have they ever said anything like this happened to them?
No, no.
The reason I ask, you know, it goes in families, they say.
I know. Well, I firmly believe that my kids have been abducted, and then when I think back about my mother, and she had a couple of miscarriages, I wonder if they were really miscarriages, you know. And now my wife had two miscarriages.
So there may have been something to this the hybrid.
I think there's a good possibility, you know. And back then, you know, 35, 40 years ago, you didn't read about this. You know, there wasn't anything written about it. But she had two miscarriages, and when I asked the doctor what was it, you know, well, you want to know what sex they are. And I don't know, and then just run off. He turned and just ran off in both times. I don't think there was anything in there to take. I think that the agents came in the middle of the night and took the baby, and then that was it. So my wife will wake up, you know, hey, I got a problem, take me to the hospital. It's 35 miles of town, we're going to town, going to the hospital, and the doctor, you know, what was it? I don't know, and you know, I said, well, okay, you know, but they would never talk about it.
So. Tell me a little bit about this book. Why did you write it? I imagine it's good therapy just putting it down.
It is. The main thing I wrote this book for, because of the spontaneous miracle healings I've had. I've had like six spontaneous miracle healings, and these are from God. You know, this isn't any alien thing. It's from God. And when I say spontaneous miracle healings, I mean I was cured instantly. And I don't mean I had cancer and 6 months later I felt better. I mean it was pulled out of me in moments. And I've had so many different ailments, and it just, you know, it's just, you know, miracle healing.
So in other words, I'm trying to get a hold on how you really feel. I mean, you feel you were chosen by God or by the ETs or both, or they connected, or what?
I think it's both. I really do. As far as my book goes, I consider the book to be about 10% alien, about 90% about God. The aliens are here. I know they're taking us. I know they're all around us. I know they can read your mind. I know they can put thoughts in your mind. I know they can erase your memory. It's pretty much like what the government can do to you, too, of course. We all know that, you know, so.
Okay, now, the book Diary of a Psychic Visionary, and that would be you,
yeah.
I assume, by Bill McGowan.
Well, McCowan, really. It's that MCC, really.
Okay, and yeah. Now, where can I get this book is what I'm getting at.
Well, you can go on the Internet and get it, and or if you just go on my website. I got a real simple website, BillMcCowan.com, and I can autograph one and mail it right to your house.
Okay, that's MCCOWAN.
Right, and just BillMcCowan.com. I got a website, and you can go on there and you can get more information on there, and you can read about the book. And it's been a really wild, like, 19 years.
All right. Bill McGowan, thank you very much for being here.
All right.
Appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you a lot.
Okay.
Get out of this thing.
We're at the Cover Up Cafe. I'll be right back.
The biggest secret ever is about to be revealed. Fast Walkers. UFO and alien disclosure.
Words you were never meant to hear.
It's clear we're dealing with a cosmic Watergate.
This is the biggest secret in the history of the human race, the known modern history of government.
Photos you were never meant to see. Video you never knew existed. People you were never meant to meet.
As Jack Nicholson would say, you can't handle the truth.
Essentially everything that you would want to know has been covered up.
Things you were never meant to know about.
No one has produced a higher quality, better produced DVD. Anytime. Anywhere. Fast Walkers, now available on DVD for only $19.95 at ShopJerryPippin.com.
Hello, everyone. We're at the Cover Up Cafe here in Roswell, New Mexico, and we have an interesting person. I think you'll find, for one thing, he's prolific. He's written an unbelievable amount of books,
And we'll let him tell you all about that in a moment. Michael D. Eldridge?
Eldridge, yes.
Okay. Tell me, the reason we invited you on the show is you've written one book. How many books have you written altogether?
97 altogether.
I saw that on the information you gave me, and I thought, that must be a typo. But you've written 97. All of them available?
They are smaller booklets that we just gave to the people.
Yeah, you're going to have to get into that mic a little bit.
They're smaller booklets that we gave away as the years have gone by, and of course
now, you're a minister. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yes, I've been a minister all my life, and I've been preaching in what we would consider regular religious circles for 30 years, and then in 1987, I had an encounter with God. And he changed a lot of things in my life so that I could be taught by the Spirit to bring a revelation forth to Christians and religious people.
You wrote a book about revelations itself and UFO, the connection, right?
Yes, I did the entire book of Revelation out of the Bible and put in all the UFO revelation in the text.
Well, can you give our listeners some examples of what we're talking about here? Because a lot of people in traditional religion are just turning you off when you start talking like that.
Yes, they do on a regular basis, but the Lord knew they were going to react like that, so he allowed me to go ahead and do the translation so that it shows the spaceships, it shows the beings, it shows the names of the beings, it shows where they're coming from in the cosmos.
Now, tell me about the spaceship. Is it one spaceship, a lot of spaceships?
Oh, there's a lot of spaceships. The one that I was on was a shuttlecraft in 1989.
Now, how did this happen? I mean, you don't go down and buy a ticket at the airport.
No, after several encounters, three encounters with the Lord face to face, then he sent his angels, and they. I lived in a little town in southern Illinois, and I was instructed to take a 2-mile walk. On the 2-mile walk,
when you say you were instructed, you got the idea, or did you hear a voice, or what happened?
I heard a voice speak to me.
And what kind of voice was it? Was it deep, a male voice, an electronic voice?
No, it just sounded like a male voice, but a very pleasant, kind male voice.
Okay. And it told you to take a walk?
Yeah, actually, they told me to read in the Bible to turn to Ezekiel chapter 1, verse 1. I read that verse, and that's where Ezekiel had encountered the four spaceships back in the Old Testament days.
Mm-hmm. And so you read that chapter, and what happened next?
I read that verse, and I went on my 2-mile walk, and on a perfectly clear blue sky day with not a cloud in the sky, a gigantic cloud came down instantly in the field where I was at, with lightning bolts that were 3 feet in diameter hitting the ground out of it. And
so a storm cloud of lightning bolts and thunder surrounded you.
Absolutely, but it wasn't a storm cloud. It wasn't raining or anything. It was one of the clouds that the spaceships are mentioned in the Bible in that came into field. And I saw the spaceship after the fact. It stayed in the cloud the entire time until I was given three instructions and visited about 15 or 20 minutes. Then it went up into the sky, and I was allowed to see it at a distance. And the spaceship was amber in color with gigantic, what looked like waves of rainbow colors all around it. And I started writing books.
Are we talking about a big ship or what?
This was a shuttlecraft, but it was large. It was probably 120 feet in diameter or something like that.
So when it took you aboard the mothership, for lack of a better term.
Yes.
What was that like?
Well, I was still on the ground. The craft was in the air, and I was told to look up in the sky, and I saw this singular cloud in the sky. And when I did, I bodily went into the cloud and back on the earth as fast as you can blink your eyes because it startled me. Then they stopped for about 5 minutes, and then they instructed me again, and I did that again. And the next time I was taken into the sky, into this light beam that took me up there, and I watched the earth descend below my feet as I went into the shuttlecraft.
Now, being a religious person, were these people, or these ETs, these entities, Would you classify them as angels or what?
Well, yes, the biblical term is angel, but actually they are extraterrestrial and celestial beings that are in the hierarchy of God in outer space.
And what did they appear? Did they look like us? Or
I've seen six different forms of those beings.
What kind? What types?
The first type that I saw looks like a typical Nordic, blonde-haired, blue-eyed, about average. They could walk down the street here in Roswell, and nobody would know the difference whether they were from here or from outer space.
And you saw, were all of these beings all basically the same as far as their mission in life? And in other words, were they all? Did you think of them as being good?
Absolutely. These were good, holy beings that I interacted with. I have met the bad ones, too.
Oh, you have?
Absolutely.
This came later, I assume.
Yes.
And why did they show up?
I was allowed to not only see the bad ones, but to have angels help me to defeat the bad ones out of people's lives and situations on Earth.
So how does this work exactly? Defeat, you mentioned that. I mean, are you saying we have guardian angels, good and evil?
There are guardian angels.
All the time?
Yes, there are. If we get in tune, Christians and religious people would allow God to go ahead and open the realms up to them, they would have wonderful lives ahead of them to interact with the angels.
Now, we're in Roswell. The crash back in 1947, this is 60 years later. Do you think that is connected to what your experiences were? Or what do you think about this incident?
I don't think that's directly connected with my life.
I always meant the same people, Paul, or the same entities.
I don't think they're the same entities at all. I believe those were entities from another place in the cosmos.
Now, this book is available. Do you have a website or something?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, why don't you give that?
It's kind of lengthy. I'll say it slow.
Okay, we have a link. Say it slow for people who are away from their computer.
All right. It's www.yahashmelkezministries.org. Yahshua's Melchizedek Ministries.org.
Let's have a lot of guests coming up, so we don't have as much time as I'd like, but you've written another book about UFOs in the Bible, right?
Absolutely. I translated the entire New Testament with the UFO information verse for verse in the entire Bible.
Can you give me an example of what we're talking about? Most people who read the Bible, they don't think about UFOs.
Well, for instance, the star that guided the shepherds and the wise men. All of us know that stars do not move across the universe and around the earth and guide an individual who's walking along to a cave to find a newborn baby. But a Savior's Time Ark rescue ship, that's what the word STAR means in the Bible, absolutely can come down and hover over your head at walking speed and direct you exactly to any location on earth.
So your message in connection with extraterrestrials and religion is what exactly? If we don't do something, the end of the world is here, or what?
No, I'm just the Lord told me to make the Revelation book and the Bible available to the population, especially Christians and religionist persons, to help open their eyes to see that the whole cosmos is populated, that God and His holy angels or messengers are just as real as you and I. They just are able to materialize and dematerialize, and they can come and go out of your life, and they do. Most everyone's had encounters with them. They don't even know it. The spacecraft are available for helping everybody on Earth that's positive and wants to be helped by the Lord.
Do you think of these encounters you had as encounters or abductions or contact or what?
No, contacts. I've never been abducted. Only evil beings abduct people.
So all of your experiences were definitely not abductions, but contact.
Absolutely. I was contacted, informed of how to do things, and then I was treated very nicely at all times. It's gone on for the last 20 years. It's gone on even this week as I came to Roswell.
It happened while you're driving or what?
Absolutely. They moved me 50 miles from outside of Roswell on Route 70 into Roswell because I had an appointment to keep and I was going to be over an hour late, so they moved me.
I can identify that. We almost missed our first show.
Yes.
I got to Clovis. I thought I was almost here. Guess
right.
what? You're not.
Yes, sir.
Anyway, Michael, it's been a pleasure. Michael D. Eldridge, let's give him a hand again. Thank you very much. Wish we had more time, but...
Thank you very much.
Hey, we've had fun at the Cover-Up Cafe, and we've had the food is good here. If you're ever in Roswell, you need to come by and try it, right down the street from the UFO Museum. And I've enjoyed it. We'll be back with another show tomorrow night. And this series on Roswell will continue on jerrypippin.com right up through Christmas. We have about 200 shows in the can, and they'll be rolling. Well, maybe 25 shows. No, we have well over 50 in all seriousness. So we have a lot of shows yet to come, and they'll be on our website. You come and check it anytime you want to. I'd like to thank Roberta Scott for being our location producer, and Jane Swartley sitting over in the corner is our post-production editor. She comes on a nice vacation. We stick her in a hotel room with a computer and make her edit all day. We let her out for a couple hours. Until next time, thanks for listening. This is Jerry Pippin. Good night.